question.
Right.
When do questions cease being scientific?
Okay, fine. All right, fair enough.
When is God the proper answer in this in the question?
The proper answer?
Proper. Like, because, well, where does it come from?
Because,
what?
You asked
me, yeah.
Yeah,
we did?
No,
well, yeah, well, you mentioned that you would do that at the speed for the point, but I don't think we had a chance.
Right, you know what I mean? Because, like, that's always a big argument. That, you would have said, you know, science stuff would never advance. Every time you were, you didn't know the answer, you would say that's God. You know what I mean?
Why is this thing falling from the tree,
right? Let's see. But the ones who refused to accept that answer were the ones who really prospered.
But sometimes they come to that eventually.
So that's the question. When is it can you say when it's a proper question and when it's not a proper question? I mean, it's hard to say, because the Rambam says it by the heavens.
In regards to
the circular motions of the heavens.
How that happens.
In a galgal masavid below, in a galgal, what is a ruby masavid? There's no, you can't go in a circle without something pushing it. Question.
Right.
I just said that, it's a good question.
And he would have to like rewrite that perek today, right? I mean, given what we know now. He would have to.
True, a lot of things would be. But you wouldn't have to say that the. Strangely enough, you would not have to say that the earth goes around the sun.
What do you mean? You would not have to say that?
Yeah.
Why would you say that?
Huh?
Why would you have said that?
That the earth goes around the sun? That's a commonly held belief today.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I inverted your words. Sorry.
You think you wouldn't have said it because
it's relativity. Right?
I have no idea what you're saying.
You can't pick any preferred framework.
Oh.
Right. Motion's relative, you mean?
It's a lot easier if you pick that frame of reference point, but strangely enough,
I mean, Sadhguru also has like proofs that he goes through in terms of like heavenly bodies.
But the point I was making is that the argument is false to say that you can't posit God, because if you posit God, you don't advance. I said that's a false argument because the advances came about because God was posited given certain facts. And what changed that hypothesis was that the facts, they discovered more facts. And then at that point, God is no longer a good answer.
Right. But you're saying prior to that discovery, God was a good answer.
Apparently. But it's hard to just. I mean, part of the problem is it's also false. You can't just look back. I mean, the Rambam says that what? The Rambam says the reason why he says those kinds of things is the problem is that even Aristotle's astronomy was based on the existence of God. It's not like he was going back. It's not like today.
Because he wasn't trying to remove God from the picture?
Yeah, God was a very big part of his universe. The eternal universe only was eternal because it existed because of God.
It's the same way all the way up through Galileo. I mean, they always had
right.
to... I mean, they were forced to by the church. I mean, if they denied any presence of God...
Well, but with Aristotle it was different. I mean, Aristotle was different because he was a philosopher and a scientist. Whereas today, Matt and I were talking about this, today, like, those two fields have, like, diverged, and when they come across a question which technically involves the other... you know, pursuit,
right.
they just fall flat because they don't know how to think in that area. Both ways, but like it's...
Right. Well, Aristotle's been pretty much pretty embarrassed. Pretty upgraded in his whole approach
mm-hmm.
to natural science.
So interesting thing that back when the steady-state theory and the Big Bang theory were competing, then they said scientists went. They wanted to stay away from the Big Bang theory because they thought that would imply God, right?
Right.
But apparently, I haven't seen this at first-hand source. But apparently, in the steady-state theory, part of the theory is that hydrogen atoms would come into existence and come out of existence, like actually like be just spontaneously just generate and cease to be. And so the author of the book was saying that really if you say that like there's nothing in the laws of nature that we see. That creates being, right? That where being comes into existence. All you have is changing of forms. So is it really the steady-state theory? You know, if it really, you know, posited that these things came into being, you'd have to posit a creative force behind it that's outside of laws of nature that brings it into being, because you couldn't explain that within.
Well, there was a theory that the universe is expanding, but new matter keeps being created.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an eternal expansion.
General expansion. When you say it's created, you mean that the entirely created, or that the potential for it was there?
No, just they don't maybe explain.
Uh-huh.
Explain one.
Uh-huh.
But that's a good question. It's a good question. But what I'm saying is, it's hard. You can't. It's not like they were just coming. It's not like they were looking at the world. It's not like they were looking at the world scientifically and then putting in God in certain places. The whole view of nature.
Who's they?
All the philosophers.
Philosophers.
You know. Who you know, philosopher and scientists are like sort of synonymous. Natural philosophers. You know, was based on an idea of God. I mean, you know, Aristotle didn't believe that chance could create order. That's one of his big things. So, you know.
So he wouldn't have liked evolution.
No, he would not have liked evolution. But, so it's sort of like a, you know, like when the Rambam says you see God here, it's not like a modern day physicist would say you see God here. It's a totally different, you know, that would be like, for a modern day physicist to say God is the answer over here would be totally foreign to the whole thesis that's been built up. Whereas when the Rambam or Aristotle say, you know, Rambam says you see God here, that's just a culmination of everything that he's been doing up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, it's not like a screech to a whole, you know, it's not like something coming into me as a, I mean, Aristotle was an interesting kind of a thing. He was trying to say, he wanted to say that it does come from God, but not God's will. That was what he was trying to say. It comes from the existence of God, but not God's will.
What does that mean?
Meaning to say, he's trying to show that there's a reason for that he's trying to show that trying to find a reason for everything. That's what Rambam spent a lot of time in the Mora on that, you know, on the spheres, the orbits of the spheres. That they didn't work out. There was no rule. Aristotle was trying to decipher a rule as to how the spheres move. And there was no good rule they could figure out. But that's what he was looking for. Whereas the Rambam says, no, you should just say that they move in accordance with God's will. And since you cannot find any rule, that's what you should say.
And that's what you're saying before. You need to have that limited facts would be...
And because she wanted to say, yeah, Aristotle is also starting out with God, and now he's just trying to show you that the way he starts out is somewhat arbitrary, where he tries to break off God's will from things. He gets into, he tries to show, he has a funny dialogue between an Aristotelian and you know, someone with his tradition. But it was a whole different view of science.
Right.
The whole different view of science. I don't know if today would be appropriate at all.
If you say God
in science, that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. In science, see, their idea of science was a different idea of science. Like Plato was saying, like Socrates was saying, like why things should be this way, you know?
With philosophy.
Yeah. It was like based on a premise that things exist in the best way. You know? And, like, why is the earth like this? Because it's for man.
Maybe like right, that there are final causes in nature.
There are final causes in nature, right.
That's ridiculous. In
science is smart.
If you say God is the answer, though, why
but
would
but
you
I'm saying, but I'm saying even today, today you have to look at it a different way. You have to say, where does the study of science cease? And what type of questions can science answer? And what type of questions can science not answer? Their science was sort of a synthesis of why things, how they exist, related to why they exist. Mm. You know, like that was part of the equation. With modern science, doesn't really talk about why things exist, more just quantifying how it exists.
And you see, they didn't get very far.
So when you get into the whys, that's not the region of science anymore.
You see that their approach didn't really, you know, although the way it used to be, the way, you know, man used to approach science, like the philosophers, they didn't. Well, did you see much technological advancement during the era of that approach?
Actually, the Greeks were very technological.
Yeah,
what are
you guys had against that?
Ah, come on.
The
Greeks were
decorating
the problem was the Romans. That was the problem. The Romans were the problem, right?
They were the engineers.
No, I think that the Greeks were very advanced, and then the Romans came and wiped them all out.
But in terms of engineering feats, the Greeks were not that incredible.
But the Romans were not intellectual. The Romans? I think they had good choices. They were good builders.
Yeah.
But they didn't have geometry. They were
so it depends on in terms of how you judge
they're more applied. They're more
exactly. They were all towards, you know, what's going to be beneficial for practicality for them, because that's what they were doing. They were building an empire. They weren't interested in pursuits of
modern world more like Rome, no?
The Archimedes, so he was working in the Romans. You know, that's the whole thing with the Archimedes and the. That's not true. You saw that?
The ray?
Yeah.
The what?
A myth that when the Romans were attacking the Greeks, so they came in with the ships. You know, Archimedes was in Sicily. I thought he was in Sicily, you know. Anyways, they came in with the ships. So, they have this myth that Archimedes devised a mirror system to concentrate the rays of the sun on the ships and burn them at sea.
But it wasn't that far fetched. It just didn't work out enough practically. Like, the idea is possible. It just wasn't.
Yeah, it was very, very hard.
Yeah, that was the problem.
Very, very hard.
Then you make he did make the claws, right? The grab the ships.
Oh yeah,
the levers. Yeah, that's what they were doing. Systems of levers that, you know, you apply enough leverage at a certain point, and it, you don't need as much force, and they could just flip these ships when they got too close.
Leverage.
Yeah, he had all sorts of incredible devices.
No, but you see, the Greeks were around for hundreds of years, and they didn't produce.
The Greeks came, and the Romans came in, and he said, "Just let me finish this." Right, get his stab him to death. Like no regard for.
I'm saying, like, the Greeks were around for centuries. Like, they didn't... Yeah, they were advanced.
They claimed that the Greeks had automated machines. They had things. They had, like, a car. They had some sort of a car. I mean, they didn't have electrons.
But I'm just saying, in terms of, like, judging progression, they can't, like, judge it based on...
Nobody approached. The question
when we landed on the moon, there was a flag from Athens.
And also, there's a certain point, like, there's certain breakthroughs
like
that
Aristotle's
make...
No, like, approach to science was that, well, that's what they criticized.
Like that.
At first, the science was not that. It wasn't a quantitative approach. It was more a qualitative approach. And, Earth has a certain quality, that's why it goes down. Certain assumptions, certain things were assumed. A lot of assumptions.
Quintessence and
right. They assumed that. Well, the big assumption was that heavy things fall faster
right.
than light things. That was the big assumption. Everybody believed that. Until Galileo.
That's just because. That's just because no one experimented. I mean,
yeah.
Like.
No experimentation.
Right. Is that part of their sheet though, or is that just they? I mean, like, did they hold like, oh, it's just a waste of time? Like, what was it? Like, he could have easily figured that out.
They claim that Aristotle says that men have more teeth than women.
Yeah.
Just never bothered the characters with white teeth. I don't know.
How do you relate to stories like that? I mean, the ancients weren't fools. I mean, like. Just look. I mean, like, it's hard to understand
yeah,
that.
Takes, you know,
they didn't have good.
They were convinced of the reality of that approach. They were convinced of it.
They believed they could do anything by thought. I mean,
that's what they. Yeah.
They didn't need to experiment. They knew it all in their head.
I mean every scientific
yeah,
approach
get
has
that.
Some framework, certain you know assumptions that they make.
And one guy accidentally counts.
Yeah,
and what his philosophical world is shattered.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the truth is, they were swung towards the quantitative. And then Einstein sort of levered back, counterbalanced it back. I mean,
towards what? Towards?
Towards theoretical. I mean, there was no way to work out the certain things.
Right.
Now you have a lot of
math. Now you have a lot of math, right?
Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's plenty of theory going on.
This theory, right? It's also a lot of wild ideas. Well, they got through, but they have a little glitch with the particle accelerator in New York.
That's good.
Right? They're supposed to make this particle accelerator, the biggest particle accelerator in the world. Try to find the graviton. Look for the graviton.
That's really 10 miles long.
Sounds like a Metatron.
Is there a whole question of whether that would cause a black hole or not?
I doubt it. But,
Oh, yeah.
But
I hate it when that happens.
They made a mistake and whatever.
Whole thing's gone then?
No, it's going to be a few months in a way.
Oh, no big deal. Something getting delayed and not a surprise.
The tears of.
Probably great to go running here.
Precise.
Yes, sure.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Precise.
Right. It's like a little embarrassing. It's like very obvious.
Kind of like not converting miles to
kilometers. Yeah, like the brace to hold up the magnets wasn't strong enough or something.
And everything
fell
apart.
Thing.
Yeah.
Shuttle thing?
Yeah. It was, no, it was
the,
like,
one of the rovers.
Bullseye.
Mars is solid.
That's what we want.
Yeah.
Wait, so are you saying that in the current view of science, then there still would there still be a place where they would say that that the cause is outside of nature?
Well, that's what they run up against, the singularity, where they don't know where the laws of nature started.
What do you mean singularity? What is that?
A certain point where they know laws of nature work.
Like
you mean going back.
Going back.
Right.
And that they can't explain. They can't explain how laws of nature came into being.
Right.
And they all pretty much agree, if you accept the Big Bang, that it came from nothing. They do seem to agree to that.
Was that speck there before it exploded? Or it also...
No, it couldn't be.
It wasn't just there and then it exploded.
It can't just hang out and then just explode. It's got to come into existence and explode. Right, you have to be created exploding.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's what they,
Right, white, yellow.
What about
the name of the
planet? So I don't understand, how is it possible to be an atheist and a scientist today if that's what the Big Bang has come to?
It just proves that measurable time, that our instruments just can't go beyond that point. So you can't say whether or not there was an eternal, there was an eternity before that or not. It's just, you know, right? And that's something that you know, we just can't measure.
Right. I mean, where God always enters the picture is where you're looking for a cause that you feel cannot be supplied by science, by nature.
Right, so that's going back to the question.
Outside of nature.
So that gets back to the question. In other words, if there's always a possibility for discovering more facts, then it would seem like the approach of ever positing God is just wrong, because you can't know that you've discovered every fact out there. It's possible there's another thing you just didn't find yet.
Well, it's a good question. It's like we say that Newton discovered certain laws, right? And then it turns out that they're not really right. Right? So, all these different points in science were all shown to be wrong. Newton discovered certain things, they turned out to be wrong. Einstein discovered certain things, turned out to be wrong too. Special theory of relativity is true, but it's not really true. Like, there's certain cases where it doesn't work. And everything builds on the past. So would you say, well, their approach was wrong because they kept being wrong? So you say, no, of course not.
Right.
So the approach is not wrong. Why? So let's think about it in the opposite way. Just because the God idea has to move doesn't prove that it's wrong either. I'm just thinking this.
Right.
New clothes. Thinking that. I'm not sure it's going to work. You know what I'm saying? It's not a good proof to say, because I can show you your method kept failing, that means that it's wrong. Because then you could say science is wrong.
Right.
Right? So it means no. It means that the general approach is right. It's just you can't say at any point with utter conviction that this particular conclusion is the ultimate truth. But I know that there is a truth, and I'm not sure. I know that this type of truth exists, but I'm just saying at this point, this is where I see that it lies. Would you say that a person is wrong? Would you say a person in Newton's time would be foolish to say that he feels he's got it because all the other theories before him always felt that way and weren't true? Well, how are you supposed to feel? Right? So what I'm saying is, I think there always is this dichotomy, that there is the realm that science has discovered, and there's always the realm there's the realm of cause and effect in nature, and then there is going to be a realm of cause outside of nature that's going to bring nature into being. Right? Every generation is going to have to, you know, according to their mind, see where those two things lie.
But you are premising that there is such a point.
They're both going to keep moving.
Such a theory, this is not a problem, but such a theory must then premise that there is a point at which
science being defined as the laws of nature, not how nature came into being, right? That science ends.
That's right.
That there are no more facts to discover. There are no more rules to we know it all. You must say that there is such a point in science in order for this theory to have validity.
And yet there's more to know.
Well, there is more to know because we don't know how this all came into existence.
Right.
But the system is complete.
Theoretically, there's a point like that.
I mean, do we have that in Sajjan, that there's a point like that?
Yeah. He says, otherwise, if it's infinite, then you can never know a part of it.
Something like that, yeah.
Is that the
answer to
science?
What does that
mean? It's a philosophical
stuff.
The nature of our knowledge.
What does
that mean? Talk to you. That's a hypothesis. It's a theory. It's a theory that we have. The science... it doesn't seem to be a big stretch. You're saying that science can never explain how science came into being.
Right.
Right. That seems like a logical assumption. Now, just because a person 1,000 years ago thought this is the part where you see it, and he was wrong, is no more wrong than the guy 1,000 years ago who said this is science and he was wrong.
Solid approach.
Right.
Right.
And if anyone ever would try to counter and say that there is no such point of an end of science, then you'd have to ask them, well, what about the question how science came into being? Because that would seem to indicate that there is a thing outside of science.
Logically, right. Logically, a thing can't create itself.
Right.
The thing is that the scientists had so much success in their quantitative analysis that...
they dropped the qualities.
That they dropped logical argument altogether. And that the thing can't bring itself into existence, although it's a logical principle, doesn't fit into any scientific way of thinking. So they just say, yeah, that's just like that old way of thinking. That old way of thinking where you tried to think about things logically, that whole thing failed. So this logical principle, too, is just a logical...
That's funny.
Simple, you know.
Policy.
But it's just an internal logical point.
Yeah, certain other things like the like non-contradiction, like they'll accept as part of their premise, even though that's not a scientific
right.
truth. That's part of the old thing. Yeah.
Right.
So there just must be this point in science that has a limit. But in terms of external from science,
that's so cool.
I mean, you would have
there's
to
a limit to science.
That's right.
That's really interesting.
Right. I'm saying they push against each other. And as one's going to move, the other one's going to move too. Maybe. I mean, there's a lot of movement where you don't, you know, like once you get to the Big Bang, it would seem, you know, you can have a lot of revolutions in science without changing the point where you think you got into the equation. But, and when you look at some of these crazy things, yeah.
Are scientists wrong for saying, like, let's say they hold by the Big Bang? Are they wrong for saying, yeah, I don't know how it got here, we don't know yet, but... You know, you could say it's God, but I just don't know.
Right. That's not wrong.
But
to say that there's never a point logically that science had to have come into being, and there's no need to find an answer to the question, how did science come into being, is wrong.
It's a positive God.
When you say science coming into being, you mean the laws of nature coming into being? Or what do you mean science coming into being?
Yeah, the laws of nature.
Oh, fine.
The laws of nature.
I mean, it would seem to positive God, like, right now, before the Big Bang, that's what causes the Bang, that it would be stupid, because it would be saying that we now explain everything, and most likely we haven't gotten anywhere near it. So, meaning we know that science always, over years, is going to change, and it's always moving. You know, like long positive God by the spheres, but it changed. So, I mean, at this point, like, shouldn't we realize that, like, we're probably nowhere near explaining all of science, and like, and that God is probably not right at this point, right now. So just say, okay, you're not
but right. That was your point about Newton. You should not think, right, once you get to Newton, even though they saw everything before it changed, they're not going to now think, well, even though there's nothing wrong, we can't see anything wrong with the theory we uncover, since everything before turned out to be false, you're right, you can't know in a positive sense that this absolutely is the end, but it would also be rational to say, well, since everything else changed, we have to throw this out, right? I mean, that's just not a rational way to relate to your findings.
He's saying maybe you should just have a doubtful, then we should just feel doubtful about it.
I just don't see any reason to posit
why should you feel, why should you be sure that you think that the cause of the Big Bang is God?
Yeah.
Maybe they'll find a way to explain how the Big Bang came into being. Just like it was unimaginable to unexplain the spherical, constant spherical motion, right? Without a revolution in thinking, science, maybe there'll be a revolution and be able to explain that. I mean, they got these crazy theories, they got these wacky, crazy theories, the parallel dimensions.
Yeah.
All 55 then.
Most of them are very, very tiny, though. You can't notice them. But the wormholes and parallel universes, and maybe that was the Big Bang, two things touched by accident. You ever see that?
No.
You ever see that one? What's the name? Hawking has this thing, imaginary time.
He's really against God, though.
But it's because of science, because he believes that once you let God in, that's bad, right? So I just saw someone said that when the guy, this French guy, Laplace, famous physicist, where does he explain the whole thing? Where does God fit in? He says, I have to count the need for that hypothesis. But they didn't believe in, they believe in the steady eternal universe. But you're saying that at least to the degree that you feel uncertain about the validity of science, you should feel uncertain about the validity of God being the cause.
No, I'm not saying. See, I'm not saying. I agree that
because they'll have to uproot the common notions of science to get beyond this.
Right. Yeah, and this is different than some other just point. Like,
there have to be a whole new way of looking at things.
Right.
Just like from Einstein, just like from Newton, just like from Aristotle to Newton, or from Newton to Einstein, there was a total revision. Right.
What do you mean by certain? Like, I mean, you always have to. You are always certain, but you're also always open to contradictory facts that will evolve. That will
not really. Evolve. Not really. People are not open to
contradictory facts. I mean, one could be.
So what do you call that state of?
Right.
I mean, that's, then how certain is that?
Yeah.
So you're certain about your approach.
Yeah.
Why did Einstein, why did he find it proper to posit God? Like, why did he take the approach that maybe it'll be...
It is a little, it's somewhat of a philosophical, a lot of the physicists were struck by a philosophical improbability of the perfection of the system. You know, like I was saying the other day, that they say that, well, first of all, the Big Bang is a startling thing, you know, and also...
Well, a lot of science was startling at one point.
No, but startling in the sense of a cause, of an unknowable cause, in the beginning.
That was a function of how well you saw the system.
Plus, once you get to the idea of the beginning, and once you see how, you know, it turns out, I don't know enough about it, but it turns out that there's a perfect balance. I was mentioning the other day that nature works out. Nature is composed of the perfect amount of each element. And if it was off by a fraction, the whole universe would collapse. Would annihilate itself. I mean, it just would not be able to exist.
Atomic elements?
Yeah. Atomic elements.
The last time I remember hearing about it, the chemists told that basically it wasn't created that way. It evolved, basically.
But whatever it is, whatever beginning materials there were the perfect amounts to devolve into these later...
If you had the initial balance of like certain elements, then you never would have had the correct distribution.
They told that the heavier elements are created by stars, basically.
Yeah.
So it wasn't an initial balance. It was
no, but
the initial
there,
balance.
There
was
to be
stars.
Hydrogen
and whatever. It has
else to be the first 3 minutes. It was the first 3 minutes? What?
It's a book?
It's a book, yeah, the first 3 minutes. He goes through the first 3 minutes of creation.
Who is he?
A lot happens in the first, you know, few hundredths of a second. That's where the main stuff occurs. Get it on an audiobook. I didn't hear it, but I read the book a while ago. Well, yeah, I don't remember most of it. It's very complicated, confusing stuff, but basically, you know, if you believe him, he's a Nobel Prize winner, you know, he's a big good physicist. You know, he goes through, like, how they try to figure out, and based on stars and stuff, they try to figure out what was necessary to get to where we are. You know, they do a reverse engineering. Mm-hmm. What was necessary to get to where we are? You know? Which the Rambam holds is an illogical approach, by the way.
Reverse engineering?
Yeah.
That's what they call it.
Like
the Rambam says, if you would take a human being, a full-grown human being, and you would show that to a person who's never seen a human being before, there was no conceivable way to figure out how that person came into being. And if you would then tell this being, that the person was was contained inside a sack of fluid for 9 months, with no oxygen and no food, they would think you're insane.
Maybe that's just because he didn't have modern biology. If he had modern biology,
no,
you could...
No, still can't figure it out. You can't just take a person and...
Speculation.
And keep going smaller, smaller, smaller to a baby and then figure out, oh, it must have been in a womb of a woman. With, you know...
It's the same thing, Freud says, the same thing with, like, certain disorders.
But
you can go back, but you can't try and recreate it. You can't say that, you know, one thing is going to happen, and then based
on that,
you
can reverse engineer things.
So you can go back and you can identify causes, but you can never know the correct balance, so you can never understand.
It is possible to reverse engineer things.
That's what you mean by reverse engineering. But,
yeah, talk to the Soviets. They do it all the time.
Into being. Into existence, yeah.
If you could watch how they progress, you could start to
combine
them. Just like if you saw a child growing as a human, then you could start to, an adult, then you could start trying to guess. So if you also have the elements, they can see how...
Just more fundamentally. At a certain point, you're not going to...
Heavier elements are created, so...
Right, but those elements...
It's not illogical, it's only
going to
get you so far.
You're not going to know how those smaller elements came into being.
That's what...
Oh, yeah.
There is a lot of places we can do it.
No, if it's not an illogical method, it's just only going to get you so far. You're right, you're never going to get back to the ultimate root causes of the thing. Yeah,
the method doesn't work, because the method is trying to figure out the ultimate cause. But the method doesn't work. It's trying to figure out how it came into existence.
Okay, fine. It still can give you insights into the thing. It may not be able to give you
that's
the...
That's not what we're saying.
Oh, okay, fine.
They're trying to use it as what is the ultimate cause, but it doesn't work.
Right, we can only take the universe that we know and try to go back how...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay.
There's no relationship between what you have... There's no logical...
Right,
no,
I understand what you're saying.
What you have now and how the thinking
is. Because then it was a different thing, so how can you go from this to that, right?
Yeah, I mean, take a look at a giant redwood tree and...
Okay, fine.
Contained in the pot of an acorn. I mean, you can't logically connect those two things. If you've seen it, you can go back. That's what they do in the stars. They say, well, we know there's a lot of hydrogen, and then we see hydrogen being produced. So we know hydrogen is produced, therefore we can work with that. But you have to see an example of how it's done. And anything you've not seen an example of how it's been created, you can't just guess how it's been created.
So what's our take now on what Nisam was asking about how, like, or Rafi, like, so why not just say that we don't know and that it's not really proper to now posit God, just say, listen, at this point, we can't explain it, and therefore we don't know. Because of all the reasons we just discussed, like, we can't go back that far. We just, given our current understanding of science, we can't get there.
And therefore,
it's not appropriate to then come along and have this confidence and ability to say this is the demarcation between science and how science came into existence, and this is the point where we posit God, because you can never know, because there's always possibilities for a revelation in science, revolution in science, and then everything's changed.
But then at the same time,
so you should always be in doubt. Is that always being doubt? Is anything about where the point is?
Well, I mean, it's not full doubt. Obviously, you're going to functionally have an understanding of things. You don't run around.
Well, I don't know about always. I mean, there must be a point theoretically that you won't be in doubt.
Theoretically that
you come to a point, but at this point, you haven't reached that point. So there's no. And if I was concerned about.
They never get to the point. I mean,
there's always another thing out there.
One wins out, unless science gets to the point where it says there are no more questions,
which I can't ever see.
Which they'll never get to.
Put
them out of business. See, that's what the size of the means, like the infinite, and that little part. There's like a little part that's infinite. That last step. It's just out of reach.
But I mean, if you're
Yeah, go ahead.
So if you're going to say that there's always this point, then it shouldn't matter when the point is. You know that there's going to be a point. So then you can say
right,
that
that's
there's
saying.
Going to happen.
Based on the science that you have today, that's really going to attach your... That's where you attach your particular expression of that, of the philosophical point.
But you shouldn't have to attach that. You should be able to look at history and say, okay, there's always going to be this point. Now we can separate this from that point. We can separate the idea of God from that point of where it is going to be in scientific. We should be able to say it's independent, though, at this point, because we see it just keeps moving. It's not objectively related to a certain point that's going to keep moving. It's transient. So what it shouldn't matter when that point is. We should just be able to say that based on the fact that we see that there's always a point, there always will be a point, so there must be a God.
That's correct. But Nisan has a more practical question, like how should you feel?
Because the thing is that if you're concerned about having true ideas, to say that God is here, I mean, if I was going to, hedge my best, I would, I wouldn't say that.
You wouldn't say that, right?
Because odds-wise, it's not true. You're just having a false idea, as opposed to just saying, I don't know. Whereas there, you don't have a false idea. You just...
Right.
But what, I don't understand that concept. Yeah, I don't know. What's the benefit?
I mean, at the same time...
Because it's not false. It's not false.
Why don't you know? Why can't you just say that?
What does it even mean to say that there would ever be a point where you could think that there's no more questions to be asked? I mean, like, there's always a possibility of it. You can never know that there is a fact out there that you can never have positive knowledge that there are facts that you don't know. I mean, Right, but how could you ever know that you're wrong about that? Because if the thing is out there that you don't know, you don't know it. So, like, you can never say with definitive, we know everything there's... How do you know? I mean, like, so how can we ever say that there is such a point? If you could never know... Like, no, but it's funny because, like, we're.
At this point, you don't have the best, and you just don't know. You can be certain that you don't know.
But now we're saying that there's a point that exists, but it's impossible to reach. So, what kind of existence is that?
See what I'm trying to think about. Let's think about it. Now, there's a question like this. That although theories change, science advances, theology retreats, the confidence, one thing shines through from beginning to end. There's one thread that shines that you can follow from beginning to end. One thing never changes. And what is that one thing that never changes? That the mind is a perceiver of reality. Right? That doesn't change. That does not change. Just the mind perceives more realities as it goes along. Right? So, if there are ideas that are associated with the mind being a perceiver of reality, And you can strip them down to be sure that they're just associated with that aspect of the mind, not dependent on particular facts, then you should be able to say with confidence that those are true.
Can you give an example?
That's going to be in philosophy, though. It's not going to be in anything empirical, right?
Nothing empirical, right.
Can you just give an example?
Like I'm saying, if I could say that the idea that a thing cannot create itself stems from my mind, and it stems from the same part of the mind that perceives reality and uncovers truth. And no matter how many scientific revolutions occurred, it always was through that part of the mind. Then that part of the mind is true through every scientific revolution. From beginning to end, the fact that that part of the mind perceives truth is true, because that's how you got through the revolutions. As Newton said, if I am, what are you saying? If I can see far into the distance, it's only because I'm on the shoulders of giants. Right? If I see things man, other men have not seen, it's because I'm on, it's only because I'm on the shoulders of giants. So, it took a lot of partial perception of truth. In other words, the point is, the story of science has one constant, and that is the mind of a person able to perceive truth. Right? That's what got to each stage, that's what overthrew each stage. It's the same thing. Right? So that, although the current scientific belief in particular changes, that aspect, the fact that that aspect of the mind is true never changes. So any truth that is associated with that aspect itself has to be true. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So if the mind, if the intelligence of man, which is the tool that has revolutionized science from beginning to end, also tells them that a thing cannot create itself, and that's just a part of that tool, it's just what your mind tells you, then it's a mistake to say, because science changed, then you can't trust any current conclusion. No, because what changed science of all those things? It's this very same thing, that the changing of science is not a change, it's a constant. You know what I mean? It's a constant. The constant is that the human mind perceives underlying truths. And if that same thing that perceived all these truths tells you unequivocally that this must be true, then you either have to say the mind is really not good, it just accidentally came across all these truths, or this is a truth that it's perceiving, just as much as any other truth is perceiving. And since this truth is a perception not dependent on current data, like you're saying, right, all the theories are only based on the current data, that's why everything gets overthrown. I mean, in reality, that's why science advanced. Because the data gets thrown. I mean, that's really why. I mean, that's what the Rambam says. Even the Rambam says that Aristotle was only able to maintain his ideas because he didn't know enough about astronomy. He didn't know that there were crazy patterns of motion in the sky. He had a limited set of facts, and with that he was able to work out his theory. That's what the Rambam says. The Rambam pulls one of those, even the Rambam pulls a then and now trick. Says, if Aristotle would see all the current data, he himself would not maintain his theory.
I mean, that's why Copernicus was able to do it, because he had Tycho Brahe. I mean, he had all the data already recorded for him. It wasn't that he was sitting there for...
Right. That's right. I mean, and the revolutions, all the revolutions were because of the new data that forced them out of the old
right.
thing. You know? But if it's an idea not dependent on data, just purely dependent on the function of the mind, that a thing cannot create itself. Not because I never saw a thing create itself. It's just a logical conclusion of that apparatus of the mind that I must maintain it.
And the funny thing is that the scientists won't acknowledges the validity of that type of truth.
That's right.
Explicitly, in the same way that they
do. It's a bit of a contradiction.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a contradiction that they have. That's like Sajigon has something like that. Doesn't Sajigon have something like that? He has something like that, that ideas that are formulated without any external stimuli must be true.
Right.
Right? Take a look again. He has something like that. Says ideas that you have just from the mind must be true, because the mind is a truth seeker, a truth teller, and it's just a matter of uncovering truth. The only reason it fails is because it's uncovering truth in particular data, and it might not be interpreting the data properly. But if it's not dependent on data, then the function of the mind is infallible, or at least it's the mind.
Uh-huh.
And that's the only thing we have to search truth.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So how should Nissan feel?
Should be happy that he has a good mind. So that's what I think that right. The fact that science has to end and God has to begin is something that your mind tells you. Can you feel secure that this is the point? Only to the degree that you feel secure science has only to the same degree that you feel secure about your knowledge of science.
I'm saying it would not be better to just say you don't know.